September the 1st, 2007. What an exciting day for me as an ECU fan was going to be. East Carolina was playing Virginia Tech that day on national TV because this was the first event on the campus since the mass shooting. Our student body had raised money and we were going to make a donation to their student body to help in their recovery. And we were going to have a presentation, and it was going to all be millions of eyes looking at our football, my school and our football team. Very special in to history since I've been going to East Carolina. And also that later on that afternoon, we were going to have a surprise birthday party for Emily at the lake. So it was going to be a big day. I got up Saturday morning, maybe a little earlier than usual, knowing I was excited for all the events that was going to go on that day. Got up and went down the driveway. Simple task I did every morning to get the newspaper. Didn't get all the way to the end. I lost my breath. I start kicking myself and I said, Tommy, you're a grown man. This is silly. Over a football game, you get this excited. So I sat there and leaned up against a tree and caught my breath and kept knocking myself side to face for not keeping my calm like I should, like I'm trying to do right now. So after I got my breath, I caught my breath, I went down, got the paper, went back to the house. I don't think Sally had gotten up yet, so I hadn't said anything yet. So I sat down, started feeling a little better, but something wasn't quite right. She came in and I told her what had happened. And I said, you know, you always told me I get too excited over this game, but I really have gone overboard this time. She said, do I need to take you to the emergency room? I said, no, I just need to get myself in shape. Mentally. The morning went on, and maybe I felt a little better, but something still wasn't right. As it got close to 12 o'clock, my good friend and college roommate for 4 years was coming over and watch it with me. And that was his lake house we were going to after the game. Well, he got there, and I told him I wasn't feeling too good, but I think I was going to be all right. Well, it was kickoff. They kicked the ball off, ran it back, and all of a sudden I said, you know, I got to go to the hospital. He knew I was sick then. Sally and I rode to the emergency room over here at Percy Memorial. They took care of us right quick. Even when we got there, the ramp that went up to the back door there, I just got partially up there before I ran out of breath again. I knew then it was more than nerves. So my mind was spinning. We went on into the emergency room and everybody looked after us. We went right back there. They hooked up, did an EKG. And then they came in and says, it looks like you're having a heart attack. Well, I hadn't always eaten properly, a little extra weight. I said, I'm going to have a couple clogs, blocks. They're going to do a catheterization, put a stent in. I'll be back normal in a couple weeks or two. So the ambulance drivers came there, and they introduced themselves, said, we'll be taking you to Duke. And I said, thank the Lord I'm not going in the helicopter. Where the attendant that was with the driver says, oh, I don't know, by the time you see the way he drives, you might wish you owned a helicopter. So we get in the ambulance and headed toward Duke. Everybody needs to ride to Durham on their back. It's a different scene. It's totally different. But once again, you know, I'm thinking, I'm not really getting excited or anything. I said, you know, they're going to find a couple blockages. I'm going to be okay. So we go straight on to Duke. Backed up to the dock there in the emergency room where they unload the ambulances. I was so impressed. There was this group of people from the cath lab waiting on us. I mean, they were sitting there like they'd been expecting us for a long time. Took me straight to the lab for the catheterization. I don't remember much about the catheterization. They probably gave me something to relax me, but I do not remember much of that. But I do remember after they had finished, this voice that comes out from behind a glass with all these screens behind it says, Mr. Humphreys. And I said, yes. That's the first time I've been awake. He says, I want you to look at your results before we take you out of here. He says, and William straightened out this. I used to tell folks I had clean arteries. William said, no. He said, you do not have any clogs in your arteries that should be causing your heart to do what it's doing. We don't see anything that's causing your heart to be beating so fast and what was going on. And I just said, well, what does that mean? And whoever was standing beside me put his arm on me. He said, that means you're a very sick man. Well, at that point, they take me to the ICU. And I don't remember a whole lot. I was on medicines. My heart was going crazy. I remember a few things. I'll never get out of my mind that he said I was a very sick man. And they find out later, this was done later on, but they found out I had something called giant cell myocarditis. And if you Google it, you'll find out exactly how rare and deadly it is. It's an inflammation of the heart. 90% of the cases are resolved by death or transplant. 10% survive, and not many of those live over 1 year. So it's not a thing anybody wants, but it is very rare. Well, they take me back. They give me medications. They put a balloon pump in to relieve my heart and start giving me medications. Everybody tells me this, and I say I go in and out, that I improved the first 2 days. And the second day, they thought they might give me out of intensive care to a step-down unit. But then the second day, things start going to the worst. My doctor tells me, since there's so few cases, and some other hospitals have a case of it, they call to him to ask what to do, and he tells them, watch out for that second day, because you'll see a crash. And he said he has found that in two or three other cases, the same thing happened. And like I say, I don't remember much going on after that second day. I do remember one thing vividly, is that Sally's brother Johnny came in to see me. And I remember him walking in the door in the room and going and sitting down. And what conversation we had, I cannot tell you the first word. But I do remember him getting up, going to the door to leave, and all of a sudden he turns around, comes back, kisses me on the forehead and said he loved me, and I grabbed a bed and said, I am a sick man. I knew then. I knew the doctors were right. But like I say, things continued going downhill after the second day. On Saturday, I do remember a conversation that doctors, you know, they go in teams, and I had a lot of teams because this was so rare. They asked Sally one time what type of special person was I, because they seen every top doctor at Duke coming in examining me, because they all wanted to see, try to figure what was going on. But on this day, on this Saturday, there were four or five of them in there, and they were discussing if they should get to paddles and do electric shock and see if that would help my rhythm. Well, out of the five, four were saying yes. One doctor, who was my lead doctor, was saying no. He thought that might make things worse. Well, in my mind, I was saying, go, Dr. Rogers, go, Dr. Rogers, because I thought he had the right idea. Well, my eyes must have got that big. I couldn't say anything, but it must have got that big because I heard someone on the doctor says, maybe we better go out in the hall and continue this discussion. Well, as it turned out, Dr. Rogers lost, and later on that day, they did electric shock, and it didn't help. Sunday, they called family in. They didn't think I was going to make it through Sunday. That's why I recognized them. They knew what was going on. I was still down there just hanging on. I didn't know all this was going on. I didn't know they were being called. And of all things, it was after the Saturday night when ECU had beat Carolina. And here I was. They said I wasn't going to make it through the day. So they called them in. They decided that they were going to do an operation and put an LVAD in, which is a support to your heart. They open you up and put a tube at the top of your left side and the bottom and then hook it to a VAD to help pump. Well, once they got in there, they found out that my heart was so weak at that time that the LVAD wasn't enough. They needed left and right. So at that time, they put them on both sides, punched four holes, right below your rib cage with the tubes coming out. And they go into this great big 400-pound machine that is pumping for your heart with the VADs on my side. And I could lay there in the bed and hear, I could hear the blood going through the machine and into the heart. So that's when we knew that if I was going to leave Duke Hospital, I had to have a heart transplant. That's where my faith, and I mean, I had faith, but it gets much stronger then. I had some crazy, crazy dreams. Crazy dreams. Laura called me loopy or something. They didn't want to put crazy on the internet, but they said something about loopy. They had codes. They called me loopy on that. And I had a feeding tube in, and when I gave him so much trouble wanting something to drink, they say, pray for Daddy today. He had a very bad day, and they were having a bad day. Daddy just wanted something to drink. But it was a code. But these dreams, a lot of them I couldn't explain. But there's one that I'll never forget, and I'll repeat it until the day I die, is that I was in this tunnel. It was the brightest lights and the clearest lights I've ever seen in my life. Some pinks and some other colors I can't even explain, just bright. Clean. I remember saying how clean it was. We were walking in this lit tunnel, me and one other person. And we come to this loading dock, a ramp like you see in a subway. But there's no signs on them. There's two of them. And I say it's just as clear. And I look around and I say, well, which ramp do I go up? He says, either one of them. One of them, you will get a heart and your life will be extended on earth. The other ramp, you will be as happy and joyful as you've ever been in your life. From that point on, it just gave me a peace. You know, I don't know what death is going to be, but I think after that experience, it's not going to be all that bad. I don't want to leave yet, but I don't think it'll be that bad. Because, you know, when I was growing up, every time Marcus Welby was on TV, I had a health problem of the week. Whatever that patient he had, when I went to school that next day, I had. And here I was on a heart pump, and I could feel relaxed. Not relaxed, comfort. I wasn't perfect. We had good days and bad days. But I wasn't as crazy as I thought I would be with that going on. And the Lord had spoke to me. The letters, the messages posted. You know, T.R. once said, once I got on it, he said, I've never had someone that's in my church waiting for an organ. You know, I've never had to pray for that. I don't know exactly what to say. He says, do I say, dear Lord, let someone die tonight so Tommy can live? No. This is the prayer we should always say. Lord, let Tommy know he is in your hands and he will take care of you. He will bless you one way or the other. You do not have to worry. You know, every day I wake up, that is my prayer, that I can do something to show the love that God has shown me. And I don't know, it might be a small thing, a large thing, but you know, that's what I learned. We got on the machine September the 9th. October the 29th, I was starting to do my walk with the physical therapist and couldn't get much further than that rate. And I was doing laps that would mount up to a mile a day during the whole day, not at one time. But I had built up. That day I couldn't get hardly past that rail. Once again, I'm kicking myself, blaming myself. And the therapist says, Tommy, it's not always just you. We found out I was starting to clot. And this rice bed here had clots in it. Well, they started doing scans. And then took me to the catheterization lab. And I had clots in my lungs. But the pressures were good enough in the lungs, they thought I would still be eligible to stay on the transplant list. But our doctor came in that day and told me, he said, I wouldn't be honest with you if I wouldn't tell you that this is a serious setback. And I said, serious setback? How much worse can it be than being on an artificial heart, pumping your heart? But thanks, I don't know what all happened from that day forward, because in 2 days later, Sally comes in the room and says, don't eat breakfast. There's some rumors going around on the hall. And it wasn't long after that I got a telephone call from the Carolina Donors that a heart had been found. 20-year-old young man. Well, they took me downstairs, and I'll always remember this, as I was leaving my room, me and Bob, we called the machine Bob. Had a backup, he was Robert. But they were taking me and machine down the hall. I'll always remember that the nurses were all saying, we're praying for you. Our church is praying for you. Our friends are praying for you. I had a little nurse who said she was my good luck charm, because every time she was my nurse, we had good luck, and she was with me today. She was in charge of me. Her family was from India. She was from India. She whispered in my ear, me and my family and friends in India are praying for you too. Prayer everywhere. What feel it was of relief. I'm sitting there going down the hall to the surgery to be ripped open and taken off the machine and put a heart in, not knowing what's going to happen, and I'm not scared. Tommy Humphrey's not scared. He's going to be open and give a new heart. There was a peace, and I thank God every day for that peace. The heart went well. There's one other story I'd like to tell. When I woke up, there's so many stories I could keep telling, but we'd miss lunch. But when I woke up, and they woke me up, the doctor said, The nurse in the room says, "Would you like to see your wife?" And I thought, what type of question is that? I said, she'd been sitting in the room with me for 2.5 months. And I said, "Do I?" I said, "Yes." She says, he said, "Well, let me call and I'll get her." Just to give you a little background, when you sign up to be on a transplant list, they go through all things that are bad. You know, it increases your risk for cancer. If your insurance doesn't pay, it costs a whole lot of money, you know, and they've got to. And all I could think was about that money. That comes from my family side. But when I woke up, I mean, when the nurse came back, he had called Sally, and he said, "I got your wife," and she said, "She'll be here once the shift changes." Oh, Lord, she's working a second job to help pay for this transplant. Shift change. I didn't find out until she came in the room because I was crying. I mean, she was having to work. And I says, "What's this shift change?" She said, "Oh, that's the nurse's shift. They don't want us to come in while the shift's going on because they talk about their cases." Thank the Lord. I thought, Lord, if this thing's cost this much, we're in trouble. But I give thanks. Things have been good. I couldn't ask for better results. I volunteered Duke for one reason. I went in and had never met anybody that had a heart transplant. And I thought I'd be sitting around in a rocking chair and not be able to get out and do active things. One guy came about 2 weeks before I got my heart. He had had one 6 months prior. He's a lot younger than I was, but he had just come from a college football game. And I says, "You can do that if you get a heart transplant?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Oh boy, this thing's all right." So I know there's other folks there, and they need to know that it's not a death sentence. It is a lot of positive stuff. And as I say, every time I go to visit, it just amazes me of the people that want to talk about their faith. So it's rewarding to me too. Prayer and faith. And one thing I do tell them, don't Google what your life expectancy of Google is. Live each day. Wake up in the morning and say, "I'm here, let's have another good day." I tell this story all the time. I've been down roads and I've always wondered what was down this road. I can tell you now. I've gone down it. Live it to the fullest because you don't know what tomorrow brings. One morning I was sitting there, Sally had gone back to work. And one many times, but I was sitting at home by myself. And I was Googling that morning. That's when I've learned my lesson. And I was a little down. Radio was on. And it was Tim McGraw's song, Live Like You Were Dying. I'd heard it before, but I never paid attention to words. But this particular morning I did. And I said, you know, that's a theme I should take. So let me, if I could, just share with me a few of the lyrics from that song. He said, "I was in my early 40s with a lot of life before me. And a moment came that stopped me on a dime. I spent most of the next days looking at the x-rays, talking about the options, and talking about sweet time. Asked him when it sank in that this might really be the end. How did it hit you when you get that kind of news? I say, man, what do you do?" And this is what he said. "I went skydiving. I went rocky mountain climbing. I went 2.7 seconds on a bull named Fu Manchu. And I loved deeper and I spoke sweeter. And I gave forgiveness I've been denying." And he said, "Someday, I hope you can live like you were dying." He said he was finally the husband that most of the time he wasn't. And he became a friend of friend. He became a friend to a friend would like to have. And all of a sudden, gone fishing wasn't such an imposition. And I went 3 times that year. I lost my dad. Well, I finally read the good book, and I took a good, long, hard look at what I'd do if I could do it all again. And what a blessing if we all could live like we would die. Thank you. I appreciate it. And God bless you all. Thank you. Thank you. They pulled a trick on me having grandchildren and little children singing this morning. Don't get me crying again now. But thank you all. What's next? Hey, like I say, we told Jeff we're going to make enough mistakes, his job doesn't feel threatened. Oh, now it's time for us to offer our tithes and our offerings. So if the ushers would come forward.